On February 25th, 2024, a young active duty airman by the name of Aaron Bushnell did something both heroic and horrible. He went to the Israeli embassy in Washington, said that as a member of the U.S. Air Force, he could not be party to a genocide against the Palestinian people, doused himself with kerosene, and set himself on fire. He shouted, "Free Palestine," 5 times until finally collapsing. He died later at a Washington, D.C. hospital. He was only 25 years old. Aaron Bushnell's death was no simple suicide. It was a bold political statement. But the question is whether anybody in Washington will listen. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Aaron Bushnell clearly gave a lot of thought to what he was about to do that Sunday. He said goodbye to his friends and his family. He gave away all of his possessions. He had breakfast a few days earlier with an Air Force friend, and they talked about human rights, conscientious objection, and the war in Palestine. On his way to the Israeli embassy, Aaron began live streaming himself on Facebook. After dousing himself, Aaron said this, quote, "I'm about to engage in an extreme act of protest. But compared to what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their colonizers, it's not extreme at all. This is what our ruling class has decided will be normal," unquote. There's an important aspect to what Aaron did. He did not commit suicide, at least not in the traditional sense of the word. That's something that most of us don't understand. But we don't understand self-immolation as a political statement. Today we have a guest who can help us sort through this complicated issue. We're joined by Esha Krishnaswamy. She's a writer currently working on a piece on self-immolation. Esha, welcome to the show. We're so happy you could join us.
Thank you. Same here.
Thank you. I've learned just in the past few days a few things about self-immolation. I learned that it is not a form of suicide, at least not in the traditional sense of the word. I've learned that there is a very, very long history of self-immolation in Buddhist and Hindu culture. Before we get into the specifics of self-immolation as a political act, tell us about self-immolation in the historical literature.
Okay, well, it showed up around 3000 BC in both Hindu and Buddhist literature. And in Buddhist literature, it always comes as a form of sacrifice for the greater community. For example, a bodhisattva, which is an enlightened being, threw himself into a fire so that the starving community could have enough food. And so it's always self-immolation as a gift to the community. Mm-hmm. So it has to be done, according to Buddhist philosophy, it has to be done for the benefit of the community and not just in order to end your existence. So the purpose matters.
The purpose matters. Self-immolation entered the Western consciousness during the Vietnam War when Buddhist monk Thich Quang Duc famously set himself on fire to protest the war. The image of him on fire has been seen by virtually every American who was paying any attention in the 1960s and thereafter. The Western media generally described that as a suicide, but another monk, Thich Nhat Hanh, explained why that was wrong. I have a lengthy quote here, but I think it's important. He said, "Suicide is an act of self-destruction, having as causes the following: lack of courage to live and to cope with difficulties, defeat by life and loss of all hope, desire for non-existence. The monk who burns himself has lost neither courage nor hope, nor does he desire non-existence. On the contrary, he's very courageous and hopeful and aspires for something good in the future. He does not think that he's destroying himself. He believes in the good fruition of his act of self-sacrifice for the sake of others. I believe with all my heart that the monks who burned themselves did not aim at their death of their oppressors, but only at a change in their policy. Their enemies are not man. They are intolerance, fanaticism, dictatorship, stupidity, hatred, and discrimination which lie within the heart of man," unquote. Tell us why this explanation is so important, why there is such a divide between the Eastern sense of what self-immolation is and the Western sense?
Well, let me begin with the significance of fire in Abrahamic religions and in Eastern religions. Mm-hmm. So in Abrahamic religions, fire is associated with hell and sin and negativity, while in Eastern religions, people worship the element of fire as Agni, and that is associated with purity, cleansing, mm-hmm. holiness. And so for many years, Hindus and Buddhists alike have done ritual animal sacrifice using fire. Mm-hmm. So I think that symbolism of what fire represents in Christian and Islamic and Judeo cultures versus Eastern cultures matters a lot. On top of that, there's also the idea of how somebody gets to live on versus ending existence that is a little bit different in these cultures. In Buddhism and Hinduism, you often have reincarnation.
Right.
So this life is not the end. And in Abrahamic religions, there is an afterlife, but people don't believe people come back to earth to live again. So I think that makes a big difference on how self-immolation is perceived in Eastern versus Western cultures.
In a letter to Martin Luther King Jr., way back in 1965, monk Thich Nhat Hanh was even more concise. He said in this very short letter to Martin Luther King, "The monks and nuns who self-immolated were not committing suicide. Rather, their self-sacrifices were aimed at moving the hearts of the oppressors and at calling the attention of the world to the suffering that is endured. It is done to wake us up," unquote. Is that really what this act is all about? It's to draw attention, to wake up the public consciousness, and to affect or to impact the oppressor?
Yes. For many monks who, in Buddhism at least, they believe in extreme nonviolence. And so therefore, the only acceptable form of violence is to turn upon oneself. And that creates a message within the community to say, hey, this is serious. There is extreme oppression, extreme suffering. Look at how much I am willing to endure in order to bring this to your attention. Please take me seriously. And so that is definitely the purpose of doing that. And that's why often monks did that during the in South Vietnam in 1962. So it seems like Aaron Bushnell had read upon them and also kind of understood the philosophical ramifications of this. And that's why he said, there is an extreme form of protest that I'm engaging in. When a U.S. Airman uses this kind of extreme protest, a lot of people started to think, and there have been protests with veterans in Portland, D.C., who are burning their old uniforms in solidarity with Aaron Bushnell. Mm-hmm. So he has achieved something that others have not achieved, is to get a larger community engaged and getting to think about the U.S. relationship with Israel and Palestine and whether this is the right side of history or the moral side of history.
Well, let me ask you about that. I'm not sure if here in the West we just don't pay as close attention to some of these issues as we should, or if maybe the media are complicit. And the reason I raise that is because there was a woman who self-immolated in front of the Israeli consulate in Atlanta in December. We think it's a lady. We don't know. The media never reported beyond the fact that somebody set themselves on fire. We don't know a name. We don't know if there was a statement. We don't know a purpose. We don't even know if this person is still alive and maybe suffering in a hospital somewhere. So why don't we see more self-immolations? If they have such a deep political meaning, is it just because it's a foreign concept, or it's because the media don't want us to know?
I think it's a bit of both. In 2018, a climate protester self-immolated in front of the White House. And even with Aaron Bushnell's case, if you look at a lot of these articles, there's like two things. Mm-hmm. They've buried the lead.
Right.
So they don't actually say why he self-immolated. They say police say man self-immolated in front of the embassy. And then that's not necessary to say police say because the video is available. One newspaper even said his purpose was not clear when he was screaming from the top of his lungs, free Palestine, free Palestine. It seems like his purpose is very clear. So it seems like there is a concerted effort by many newspapers to bury the lead. And I think this happens whenever there is a protest that goes against state interests. For the longest time, even Black Lives Matter, Fight for 15 kind of got skewed up media coverage because it goes against the state interest. And I think that continues on. And I think they do it because most of these media organizations just hire from a handful of elite schools. And these people have the same life experience. So it's hard for them to imagine kind of other people having different experiences and seeing things from their point of view.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, sometimes I watch the news, the mainstream news here in the United States, and I think, am I living in the same country as these people? You know, there are stories that are so critically important to me that are just completely ignored, and vice versa. We see that all the time here.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, one example is MSNBC screaming on Russiagate and then ignoring so many other stories after the four-year Russiagate stuff.
Oh, listen, I've made a living talking about how, much to the consternation of the likes of MSNBC, there was no interference in the 2016 and 2020 elections, but that's a different issue. We're going to take a short commercial break, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation with journalist and podcaster Esha Krishnaswamy on the meaning and import of self-immolation. Stay tuned.
Узнают как героя. Здравствуйте, здравствуйте, здравствуйте. Я очень рад. Эй, парень, да, хочешь быть таким же, как я? Ничего страшного. Просто делай добро и бросай его в воду.
Вступайте в ряды ангелов, и это действительно сможет изменить мир.
Прозвали нас батальон ангелов, потому что мы были в камуфляжной форме, и они думали, что мы какой-то батальон. Наша эта группа составляла от 10 до 15 человек.
В данный момент мы выдаем здесь гуманитарную помощь.
Спасибо огромное, спасибо за то, что вот кто-то за нас беспокоится.
Мы попали в полуокружение, я тогда первый раз держал в руках пулемет.
Украинская армия пошла. Ну, я думаю, что не армия, скорее всего, а карательные батальоны пошли в наступление.
На мой взгляд, поменялась принципиальная позиция украинцев по отношению к жителям Донбасса, потому что они как бы перестали чувствовать какое-то вот человеческое сочувствие, наверное, к ним, потому что они их считают врагами, то есть все население.
Плакать хочется, как мы тут жили. Спасибо вам, дорогие мои.
Давайте вас собой.
Спасибо вам.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with journalist and podcaster Esha Krishnaswamy about the act of self-immolation. Good to have you with us, Esha. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Esha, the great whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg was a dear friend of mine. He told me once that in 1965, he just happened to be at the Pentagon when Norman Morrison set himself on fire just 40 feet from the office of Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. He watched the entire thing unfold, and he said that he was affected by it for the rest of his life. Morrison was a Quaker and an opponent of the war in Vietnam, and like Aaron Bushnell, this was not an act of suicide, but a seriously considered political statement. Even more interesting, Dan Ellsberg said that McNamara himself was horrified and affected by Morrison's action. I'm not sure how we can actually quantify something like that, but historically, how does one measure the effectiveness of the act of self-immolation? Maybe a better way to ask this is how somebody can do something like setting himself or herself on fire and then not have it be done in vain.
Well, I think it has to do with the with what happens next or the kind of the political climate. In South Vietnam, most people were unhappy with the government. They did not like the fact that the government saw the people as the enemy. They did not like living in poverty. They did not like the forcible relocations. And this gave them somebody, this helped many who were disparate and alone unite together in a cause. Mm-hmm. And so, so it has to be, there has to be a political climate or on the ground that enables that. And of course, it really helps when it gets attention, like Aaron Bushnell did, because people were able to see the raw video and the Twitch stream. I think that affected people. I mean, it affected me, and I've seen so many horrific images throughout my career.
I'm sure.
And so I think those are the two issues of what kind of grassroots infrastructure is there for people to fight against the government or those in power. And unfortunately, in many places in the US, there isn't much. There is very little protest or very little civil resistance goes on to so many government injustices that sometimes it can seem hopeless. And I think that is probably another reason that led him to do it, because he couldn't join a civil rights organization to protest this, and there isn't a concerted grassroots effort that can actually lead to policy change. So I think there needs to be, for this to happen, it seems like he himself felt desperate and in despair and did not know what to do.
Mohamed Bouzizi, a Tunisian fruit merchant, set himself on fire in 2009 because he had been harassed by the police and the corrupt Tunisian government did nothing to help him. That act of self-immolation set off the Arab Spring, which brought down multiple Middle Eastern governments. Why do you think it is that some acts of self-immolation are so impactful, while others, like this still unnamed woman, we think it's a woman, who set herself on fire outside the Israeli consulate in Atlanta last year, are virtually ignored? Is that, again, the fault of our culture or our media?
I think it's a little bit of both, and there's also a lot of other factors on the ground. Let me give you a completely different example. When the police killed George Floyd on video, that created a lot of protest that was prolonged, but there have been probably 1,000 cases where police have killed other people on protest, and that barely makes a blimp on the radar. And for George Floyd, of course, it was people were already home and with COVID, and it was extra horrific to watch this on film live. And so I think that mattered. So similarly, I think what mattered with the women in Atlanta is that there was no video. They just heard reports, and it was very distant for people. I think here, having that video made it very personal for many people. So that's why this has made it to international news. World leaders, I've seen Evo Morales and Nicolas Maduro have offered condolences for the family. So it has made international news because it's an airman. And B, it was on video. And so when somebody who's an active member of the US military does such an extreme action, people wonder, what is going on? What made him do this extreme form of protest? What does he know being in the Air Force that we don't know? And those questions are being answered by many people right now.
So I have what might be a little bit of a sensitive question. About a year and a half ago, I was speaking at a rally for Julian Assange in front of the Justice Department here in Washington, D.C. And as I finished speaking, a young man walked up to the podium, took off all of his clothes, doused himself with lighter fluid, and started trying to light a lighter to set himself on fire. Instinctively, I tackled him, and a friend of mine kicked the lighter out of his hand. He was mumbling something about prison conditions, and I don't know what he was talking about. The police, to their credit, and this was a big surprise for me, the police did not take him to jail. They took him to a hospital, which is exactly what he needed. How do we discern in cases of self-immolation what are political statements and what are the actions of someone who needs mental health intervention?
I think a lot of it has to do with how they plan it, whether they're whether it's a long-term plan, and how they arrange for the impact. So, and with Aaron Bushnell, he was in the Air Force, and he seemed to have passed all the mental examinations that they give in the Air Force, which makes a big difference.
That's right.
This young man, I don't know much about, but it seems like he has not been vetted by any mental health professional. And we all honestly don't know what happened in the hospital. So I think that is the main difference. But of course, most people, when somebody is self-immolating or trying to do that, they will do what you did, because that is what we should do as a society and not try to distinguish it. It's just that somebody like Aaron Bushnell will not do it in such a way that it's so that it is easy for others to tackle him and push him out of the way, because it's more planned and it's more of a sane, rational decision as opposed to this young man.
As more people are educated about this issue, do you think it might become more common in the United States or in the broader West? It seems like such a terrifying choice. I personally can't even imagine doing it, but I'm sure that others can. Do you think we should expect to see it happen more often?
I don't think so, just because of the culture and the meaning of fire in the culture and the various kind of cultural conditions. It's highly unlikely that it will happen more. But if there is somebody in the future who wants to do this, I would deeply suggest that they try to create an organization such that will allow for civil resistance and a way to fight against U.S. government policy, like in the 1960s civil rights and anti-war movement, which is very effective.
Yes.
Because we definitely need more people who are going to be fighting against injustice in this world.
Yes, indeed. What do you think the legacy is going to be of Aaron Bushnell? You know, I have to say, none of us had ever heard of this young man's name before just a few days ago, and now his family is receiving calls from presidents and prime ministers. And, you know, reading the mainstream media coverage of the days before his death, he knew exactly what he was doing. As you said, it was very well planned out, and he did it for a very specific purpose. Again, I could never do such a thing, but I actually admire the fortitude that he showed in making this bold statement. What do you think?
It's hard to say. What I can say is that it has been impactful across the world. Whether or not it will lead to his ultimate issue of the policy change with the US and Israel, that's very hard to say. But now the U.S. is recognizing that their position with Israel is untenable.
Yes.
For example, the Biden administration has been playing around with airdropping food into Gaza because Israel has been blocking aid trucks that's coming from the West. And so, so I think that this is maybe a spark but more and more people, it seems like wherever Biden goes, he cannot stop the cries of free Palestine everywhere. Like when he tried to interview on NBC with Seth Meyers, there was a big audience in the Rockefeller Plaza. So it is getting to be a more and more difficult for politicians to hold their status quo position where it's Israel, let's let Israel do whatever it does. And so we just have to kind of see what, and also there is the fact that militarily it's also getting harder because of what's going on in Yemen and the Gulf of Aden with the ships. So I think the combination may change the policy. And so they are paying attention to popular opinion, even if they don't want to.
I think you may be onto something there. I think that people are being forced to pay attention. And, you know, when you have the World Food Program, for example, the head of which is not just an American, but Cindy McCain, formerly Ambassador Cindy McCain, predicting a famine of epic proportions, where as many as 25% of Palestinians are going to starve to death in the next several weeks, people are going to start paying attention. And then when you have the likes of Aaron Bushnell forcing this onto the front page of every paper in the Western world, maybe that's how things get done. So, Esha, where can people learn more about the work that you do?
Oh, come to my website, historically, HISTORICLY.net. And also, I'm at Esha Legal on Twitter. And we have a lot of interesting things coming up. After this article, we're doing a deep dive on fascism because everyone has a deep misconception on fascism. So we're planning a video series on fascism.
Excellent. And they do have misconceptions. Thank you so much for being with us. The great author Ernest Hemingway wrote in his epic work, A Farewell to Arms, quote, "When you love, you wish to do things for. You wish to sacrifice for. You wish to serve," unquote. That's what Aaron Bushnell did. He loved the Palestinian people so much, he was so horrified by the plight of the Palestinians, that he sacrificed himself. I want to thank Esha Krishnaswamy for joining us today and for shedding light on this important and timely issue. And thank you to our viewers for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.